And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Radio Tony, and this is the Everyday Business Show. And this week, Amir Michelle, our wonderful real estate agent, returns for another talk about real estate, and with particular reference to Australian real estate. Now, Amir is the author of the series Where's the Bee's Blueprint, including How to Appeal to the Vendor That Isn't Ready, Renovate for Sale, Master Short-Term Accommodation Without Becoming a Part-Time Manager, Write an Option Contract, Grow on LinkedIn, Monetize on Facebook, Attract on Instagram, Secretly Grow Your Income in Property Without Being a Landlord, specializing in the 3-hour drive region around Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. Now, Amir started very young in his real estate endeavors, and I'm quite sure that from a young age, he decided that he liked this property game. And at 16, indeed, he immersed himself in developing an investor mindset, starting with the benefit of training in financial planning, an RG146 with the Big Four Australian Bank. He invested in regional New South Wales, Tasmania and Western Australia, and after consecutive years of six-figure profit, extending to seven-figure profit in real estate, Amir became a real estate agent. And so today we're going to continue discussing some of Amir's investment properties starting way back in 1997. Good morning, Amir. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm good. We've both been having this wonderful chat before coming on the show today about what our weekends entailed. And for the most part, that was mowing. And for Amir, he's in the process of renovating as well. So we might talk a little bit about that in the upcoming show. But let's start way back in the beginning in 1997 at Darlinghurst Road. Can you tell us about that first property?
Sure. Tony, one thing that I love with your introduction is when you said the book names and you're talking about the finding a property before the vendor is ready, it made me think of one of the Marvel series of the Avengers, thinking, vendors, assemble. Just a random thought that flew through my head. Vendors,
that's
assemble.
That's a good one, though, Amir. I like it too. I think you should coin that.
It's catchy, but I think it's a bit too close to the Marvel franchise. And I love the Marvel movies, so I don't know if I want to take that up.
But look, the
Airbnb thing that you mentioned as well, how to be a Airbnb host without becoming a part-time cleaner, that's so true now, especially with regional towns, because at the end of the day, you're not going to drive 3 hours there and 3 hours back just to, you know, spray and wipe, so to speak, especially with vacuum cleaning and all that type of stuff. So the good thing is that there are jobs out there where people are looking for jobs during this climate. And if you're running a few different properties right next to each other, you might be able to find one cleaner that can come and maintain 2, 3, or 4 properties without having to drive backwards and forwards if the properties are close to each other regionally, rather than you having to drive all the way backwards and forwards.
That's
for another day.
Right.
So I'm going to let's answer that question you asked
about
the properties in Sydney.
Yes, please.
So we've got I sent you through a little table, Tony, that
you did
explained where my learning came from and what I've seen, both the good and the bad. One of the feedbacks that I got from last week's talk, from the episode that you ran last week, was we said that there was one stage when I was doing a Randwick unit and the real estate agent that came to value it told me that, you know, I mean, the property market in the eastern suburbs has gone up so much and it's going to continue going. This property is now worth around $800,000. And I bought that property for $410,500. So on paper, I thought, great, I've just doubled my money, because that's what the newspapers say, right?
Yes.
So when I took it to the market and ran it through an auction, I chose the incorrect time to sell. And when you're selling a unit, the time that you sell is probably more important than what you've done to the unit, especially if there's no land underneath. So if the value of the unit is to do with how pretty your painting looks, how good you've done your corners and your cornices, how sharp your lines are, what colors you've picked, and the carpeting, these are all cosmetic things. So if the only thing that we're changing is a cosmetic thing, then think of this. Who is going to determine the price? Is it going to be the real estate agent? Is it going to be the auction campaign? Or is it going to be the newspaper saying property prices are about to go down or about to go up? The interest rates are about to go down or about to go up. What determines it? Because now it's no longer supply and demand. You're now looking at one unit for one occupant, maybe two occupants, but you're at the mercy of what the headlines say. So when I said, don't believe the newspapers, because the newspapers told me that I went from 410,000 to over 800,000, it's true. Because on auction day, when we had 20 people assembled, coming back to the vendors assembled, when we had 20 people there for the auction, the bid only came into the mid 400s when I bought at 410.
Yes.
And that's not doubling your money. But the newspapers told me I did.
It's not.
So don't always believe what's in the paper. In fact, almost never believe what's in the paper, but it's good entertainment. So use the newspaper for what it's there for. It's there to entertain you. It's there to give you a bit of drama, give you a bit of excitement, give you a bit of good news too. But it's not a statistical thesis. So don't take it as that.
That's right.
So jumping into...
Amir, people should actually talk to experts and not always believe what they read or see in media, correct? And I'm glad you didn't listen, because what happened?
Absolutely. So two things. First of all, as you said, believe the expert. The second thing is, make sure that the expert doesn't have a vested interest in telling you that the price is going to be much higher or much lower. Because if you think of the transaction of real estate, if somebody's buying the property, it's in their interest to tell you how many scratches there are and how many dings there are so that they can push the price down. If somebody's selling a property, it's in their interest to tell you how beautiful it is, what a great location it is, and how great the paintwork is. So you've got two different experts telling you that the value is worth X or Y, and you'll find that they're almost always different. The person selling wants a higher price. The person buying wants a lower price. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So let's have a look at four properties that are in the Sydney CBD area. And I've taken apart a few of the transactions that I was involved in. So some of them I didn't buy, some of them I didn't sell, but I did either one or the other or both. So I'll take the four in the CBD, which is Darlinghurst Road, Sussex Street, Cowper Street. I'm missing one. Darlinghurst, Sussex, Cowper, and Liverpool. Pete? I can't see Liverpool.
No. Okay, I can't see Liverpool. I can see Pitt Street. And that's in the city.
That's in the city. So instead of four, let's look at three. So let's look at Darlinghurst Road, Sussex Street, and Pitt Street. The difference between purchase price and selling price, but also the amount of years that went by.
Yeah.
I've heard it said somewhere, and here's my first disclaimer of the day, Tony. What you see in history isn't necessarily something that's going to repeat in the coming years. So when you look at the history from the 1990 to the year 2000, or from the year 2000 to 2010, or from 2010 to 2020, even though you've got a population growth, even though you've got an increase in property prices, and it's always been an up. There's never been a 10-year period where it's gone down. The number that you assign to it, you might think that in one 10-year period, prices have gone up 200%, and in another 10-year period, prices have gone up 10%. No, that's never true. It's never gone up just 10%. But from everything I've seen and all the statistics we're going to run through, you might see a 10-year period going up 100%, in other words, doubling in money, or 200%.
Right.
In other words, not just doubling, but tripling, quadrupling, etc. So you could really have a massive increase in property, but just because it happened 10 years ago doesn't mean it's going to happen in the next 10 years. So that's my little disclaimer. Yeah. Now let's have a look at a unit in Darlinghurst Road, which is in the Sydney yes. CBD. It's about 1 minute drive to the centre of Sydney. If you look at the numbers, purchased 1997, sold 2010. Yes. The purchase price was 137. We're always talking thousands of dollars. So when I say 137, it's 137,000 Australian dollars.
$137,000. Yeah.
So 137 purchase, 229 sell. And that's from a period of 1997 to 2010. So that's 13 years.
So,
again, another house close to it. Again, a unit, sorry, not a house. Sussex Street, yes. Sydney, about 2 minutes drive to the local business district. Purchased in the year 2000, sold in 2011. So that's 11 years.
So 11 years.
360 to 550. So again, neither of those have doubled. Then we have Pitt Street in Sydney, again another unit, purchased 2002,
yes,
sold 2011, 290 to 368. So, again, it didn't double. So what do we learn from this? There's things behind the scenes that you have to think about. Were the units occupied? Did they have tenants? Were the tenants paying on time? Were the units renovated or unrenovated? During that period of time, was any money spent to increase the value? So if the old carpets were stripped out and floorboards polished and a new kitchen went in and a new bathroom went in, that's expense in the materials, expense in labor to build it, but also expense because during the times you're doing the renovation, you're missing the rent for those weeks, months, hopefully not years.
Renovating.
You're missing out on the rent for those times. So if you think about a unit increasing in value, what actually increases? And the interesting thing in those three properties, they are in the Sydney CBD. The incomes in the Sydney CBD have gone up dramatically within that 10-year period. Absolutely dramatically.
They have.
The average income's gone up dramatically. The minimum income's gone up dramatically, which means that the tenants can afford to pay more. So the rents went up somewhat, but not as dramatically as some of the regional areas. Now, let's have a look at a comparison between that and two Randwick properties. Let's look at Avoca Street and Barker Street. So, purchased 2011. This is Barker Street. Avoca Street first. Avoca Street. Purchased 2011.
Yes.
Avoca Street. Purchased 2011. Sold 2018. I'm looking at the wrong line, aren't I? Beg your pardon.
2016.
Avoca Street. Purchased 2011, sold 2016. Purchase price $580, sold at $800. So that period of time is only a five-year period. So we're not looking at 10 or 13 years.
A shorter period of time.
A much shorter period of time. So going from $580 to $800, that's a substantial jump. If you double that time to 10 years, that'll take you through to roughly a 600,000 increase, which is roughly double.
Wow.
Right? So that's a 10-year in Randwick. Looking at the other Randwick property of Barker Street, 2014 to 2021, that's a 7-year increase, and that has doubled. So that's 1.5 million to 3 million. Now, what is the difference between the unit in Avoca Street and the house at Barker Street? The unit at Avoca Street went up 220,000 in a five-year period.
Yes.
580 is the purchase price and went up 220.
Yes.
It had substantial renovation. Exactly. So as we said last time, that unit was converted from a two-bedroom unit to a three-bedroom unit. A two-bedroom unit to a three-bedroom unit. It had substantial carpet change, kitchen change, bathroom change, just about everything that could be done to make it more usable was done to it before selling. So the question is the 220 increase just the suburb increase or is it manufactured growth? And that's the bite because you've spent so much just to convert from one to the other. just like we said before, Tony, you spent money on the renovation, money on the time and labor time to do the renovation.
Yes.
And the lost rent during that time. So you've spent three different amounts of money or time just to do that little increase in value. Now, if there was no increase, there's a possibility that that unit wouldn't sell. So when supply and demand is in such a very liquid area like the city, you actually have so many more properties that are exchanging hands that the buyers and the sellers have a lot of comparables. And what that means is that if you are looking for a unit, you can buy a one-year-old unit, a five-year-old unit, a 50-year-old unit, or a 20-year-old unit, and the price difference between them is going to be dramatic. So if you're buying a unit that you're thinking of renovating later, and it's not a brand new unit, but it's already an existing unit, think about what part of it depreciates, because the land might increase in that suburb, but the building keeps getting older and older, and that means two things. First of all, eventually you're going to need to knock down the building and build a new one. Second of all, to maintain the building in just regular operating state without leaks and rising damp and all the scary things, you will need to spend more money on your strata. So some strata units, when they're brand new, seem to be expensive compared to an older unit with no facilities. But normally the new ones include a swimming pool or a gym or lifts. If you find a strata unit that's brand new, that's just been built, but doesn't include paying strata for the extra things like the swimming pool, the lifts, the gardening you'll always pay, but the lifts, the swimming pools, the gymnasiums, then you have to compare. Then you can compare apples with apples and find something that you're only depreciating the building and the cost of depreciation goes towards your sinking fund. So properties that are units or apartments or even some townhouses with strata have a sinking fund where part of the money you're putting in is just the administration of the insurances, the management, etc. But the other part builds up every year into a sinking fund that the owners vote on how to use it every year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. So quite often you have a plan. And that's something that homeowners don't realize, because when you're buying a house, it's up to you to put together the plan. So when I do my numbers, the Where's the Bees blueprint still uses both the calculations. So I'm looking at strata, admin fees, what's in the bank already, comparing that to a freestanding house, and how, in what period of time or how often would I need to repaint the externals? How often would I need to repair the roof or replace the roof? What about the fencing? What are the ongoing costs that owning a house is going to be compared to owning a unit? Which brings me, Tony,
you effectively build those considerations into a freestanding house. So it's already forefront in your mind when you buy units, but you additionally add those considerations to a freestanding house.
I think that's very important, Tony. And I think that
good point.
Thankfully today, Excel does most of the work for you. So if you're using the Apple numbers spreadsheet, or you're using the Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, or whatever spreadsheet you're using, that does most of the work for you. So you can put in a calculation and say, okay, let's put in some compounding effect over here. Let's add some depreciation over there. And the formulas that you can Google and YouTube just work everything out for you. So it means that my job is a lot easier now than it was 10 years ago. But yeah, absolutely. I work out things like what type of depreciation schedule the tax people like. How does that affect the replacement that I need to do every set number of years? Because if the tax department expects the whole building to depreciate over 40 years, it gives you an idea of the wear and tear on a normal building out of the 10 million buildings that there are in Australia. So the tax department thinks of Australia as a whole and has had enough experience to say, well, it's not our first rodeo. We've now done this over the 10 million dwellings over the space of the last 50 years. So whether you like them, dislike them, think that you should pay less tax or feel that they're doing a fair job, the point is you can have a look at how their estimates are calculated as a rough guide for why things should be considered. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Excellent. So those were in a city and a little bit out of the city, New South Wales. What was correct. Next?
So in comparison to the freestanding house in Randwick, Randwick yes. is a yes. 8-minute drive. So Randwick is an 8-minute drive to the Sydney CBD. Comparing the two Randwick properties, we said that the unit, after doing a lot of renovation work, went up by $220,000 for a $580,000 property, but the house went up from $1.5 to $3 million. And the main difference wasn't yes. the renovation. The main difference there was that the land value, the 350-odd square metres underneath, went up in value dramatically. That's one of the big differences. When you're looking at what you're buying, you're going to consider how much depreciation or how often you have to fix the house, how often you have to paint the house, how often you have to repair the roof.
Yes.
But also yes. the suburb that it's in. Is the value of vacant land growing? If you were to knock down your house in 40 years, so let's say that every 40 years everything wears out, if you were to knock it down and build a brand new house in 40 years' time, is that worth your while or have you just thrown money away? Because if you, and this is a real hypothetical, Tony, if you were to put aside every quarter the same amount of money as you would towards a strata unit and put that into a bank account that you cannot touch that simply grows every year, you did that four times a year for 40 years, the amount of money in that bank account would pay for a complete house and more at the end of 40 years.
Right.
So think of the land growing and put it out of your mind as what's on there right now. It has to be livable. It has to be something reasonably nice and reasonable to live in. But that can be changed. You don't need to get your neighbours to approve your renovation as long as it ticks the boxes of what the council approves in the area and as long as you're doing it by the Building Code of Australia. I mean, obviously, don't try to half do something when you don't have a licence to do it. But all things being considered, yes. if you're doing things legally and you're building it according to the Australian Codes of Building, then mm-hmm. you can knock down your house in 40 years' time and build a new one. You can't do that in a unit. If you wanted to knock down no. your unit, you're going to knock down the whole building. So that
the
means
whole lot.
At least half to three quarters of the residents are going to have to vote with you to say, yeah, we're going yes. to move out for 6 months. Let's knock it down and build something new. There have been times where 66% to 75% have said yes, and the other people that didn't want to are forced to leave. But that's so rare and so random that you can't really count on it unless you're going to go in okay. and try to buy every single unit or at least three quarters of the units in that building. And right. guess what? Once you've bought your first three, four or five, the neighbors start talking and they realize that now they can double the price that they're asking because you're desperate to buy Lovely. The others so you can make the change. So let's forget about anything where somebody else is controlling your wallet. And let's talk about what we can do in real estate that actually is in our control. Because otherwise it could just be overwhelming, all these hypotheticals. You're juggling all these balls in the air that yes. you have absolutely no control over. Let's do the exact yeah. opposite. Think about
yeah.
why you got started in the first place. Why you're investing in property. Is it for the legacy for your family? Is it because you're ready to start doing your new app, your new music show, your new videos, your new creative? And you now just want the money to be stable so that you don't need to work in the artistic field for the money. You can do it for the art. Or is it because you just
yes.
can't be stuffed doing the hard work you're doing and you come home exhausted every night? Because realistically, that happens. There are some people that work in very, very rewarding jobs. Nurses and doctors. Imagine how yeah. hard they're working at the moment. Yes, they're getting time off in between shifts, but it is physically and mentally draining every single day, but we couldn't live without them. So we don't want every doctor to resign and every nurse to resign, but sometimes just being able to know that money's out of the way and real estate has taken care of the cash flow side, has taken care of the yeah. roof over your head, and now you've got your necessities covered, then you can move on to what drives you passionately. what makes your heart sing when you do it. And then you're not working for money, you're just working for joy. I'm off on a complete tangent, Tony. Sorry.
No, that's okay. It's all making very good sense to me. So back to the Randwick House that saw the value go from 1.5 million to 3 million. Was that just a land value increase, a property value increase, or did you have to renovate?
So within the space of that 7 years, let me just double check the dates, back 2014 to 2021. Yeah, within the space of 7 years, the yes. value of 1.5 million means 10% of it would be 150,000. I would say I spent less than 10% renovating during those 7 years. So that includes every few years doing new paint, doing new fencing, repairing roofs, insulation, LED lights, air conditioners for the bedrooms and the lounge room. So little things that the house just didn't have. So it's less of the renovating, more of the additional creature comforts. So within that space, yes, it was less than a 10% renovation. But comparing that to the 1.5 to the additional cost of 150, that would bring it to 1.6 million. So the increase of 3 million, the increase to 3 million, meant that the $1.5 million increase, you can only attribute 160,000, which is 10%, 150, sorry. You can only attribute 150,000 increase to renovation, and the remaining, now you're stretching my math, $1.35 million is just by being the right suburb, just by the land growth underneath.
I was going to say, so that's the land growth and the suburb growth and all those other things that you look for.
That's right.
So it's
that's
kind
right.
of a so combination, that doesn't mean that
just because it doubled doesn't mean that in the next 7 years everything else will double. So that's my disclaimer again. But yes, it is one of those things that has happened. So I'd love to show you a few examples from Oberon.
Yes, please.
The reason I went out to the Oberon area in the first place was that I wanted something that had an income from a tenant so I could leave it for 100 years and never have to touch the mortgage because the tenant was always paying. They call that either neutral cash flow or positive cash flow. Neutral means that the tenant is paying for all of your expenses, council rates, land rates, repairs, as well as the mortgage on it, so the interest rate at least. But if it's positive, it means it's actually paying off part of your mortgage year on year and paying more than your expenses that the council is doing. Bligh Street, Oberon, Glyndwr Avenue, Carrington Avenue, Jenolan Street, North Street. So these are five properties that we're looking at specifically in Oberon. So not just the Oberon LGA, meaning the whole big area of Oberon, but the Oberon Township. You can't really call it a CBD. Yes. It's too small for that. But the close to the center of town. So if it's a five-minute drive to the local, there's two supermarkets and a vegetable, fruit and veg store. So if it's within five minutes drive, I call that within the center of town.
Okay.
So let's run through numbers quickly.
Yes, please.
So we have 2014, I'll go through all of them. So 2014, 2014, 2014... 2015
and a
15 2000 I have to double check 20. That no it's not a 20 20 is the sell date. I'll have to check when the purchase date is, so I think the other one was also 2016 maybe. So I think 2014 2015 potentially 2016. I'll have to double check that one. So they went from purchase price of 160. This is thousands, 160,000 for a freestanding house, a house on land.
Pretty good.
For 160.
Yes.
Next one, 155. Next one, 200,000. Next one, 110,000. Next one, 150,000.
That sounds like a bargain.
So all of those five are between $100,000 and $200,000. Now, putting that into...
did you set...
Yes.
Did you set that as a criteria when you were looking at property? Did you have in your mind no more than 160, 150, or it was just the particular property that you found that met the
Yeah.
criteria that you wanted? Okay.
I didn't set a number range. I set a
Yeah.
rental return range. So I looked at how much
Yes.
things rent for and then decided that I don't want a 5% return because that'll just barely cover my interest payments on my mortgage. I wanted something that had double that. So if I'm buying
Yes.
something for 100,000, normally I'd say that $100 rent per week covers 100,000 mortgage. But I wanted more than that, so I was looking for a $200 a week rent for a $100,000 purchase.
Yeah.
So
And you didn't have any trouble finding that scenario within Oberon itself.
I had a lot of research. So I wouldn't say it was
Yes.
troublesome, but it does require a lot of careful thinking, a lot of
Research.
analysis, sitting and getting a sore bottom by being in front of the computer for hours on end. So think about the number of
Yes.
suburbs that are in Australia. There's eight
Yes.
states, including six states and two territories. Out of
Territories.
those, some of them are going to be better or worse in the suburb range, meaning that there are some suburbs within the states that the difference between one house, which is a three bedroom, and another house, which is a three bedroom, is massive. What that means is if you renovate it, you could bring it up to the middle or bring it up to the top. Other suburbs are very similar between the most rundown house and the top house. What that means is that you're paying for the land. So the land component is
Yes.
more important than the condition of the house. If I'm looking to put a tenant in, then I want something that, yes, the land will grow eventually, but the house needs to be in such a bad shape that I know I can bring somebody in and fix the land. Sorry, I can bring somebody in and fix the house so that a tenant can come in and pay more.
Yes.
And if you're looking for a rental income, then obviously the rent is important. You want to have the least amount of vacancies, meaning that it's never vacant so that somebody's always paying your mortgage, but also that it's not so difficult or so expensive to renovate that you need to knock it down and build new, because then you're always better off just buying
Yes.
a vacant piece of land. So there is that balance. So yeah, there was a lot of analysis. I think when I
Research.
started
Yeah.
from the research side, there was 1,000 houses in Oberon. I narrowed it down from 1,000 to 200 that were the right kind of size. The land wasn't so
Yes.
massive that I needed to hire a team just to do the lawn mowing. And it wasn't so
Yeah.
small that it meant that I could never do anything bigger than what was exactly on it right then,
Yes.
which narrowed it down to about 200 from the 1,000 that I liked. And then I narrowed it down further
Yeah.
because I was working full time. So imagine a job where I'm the manager, which means that every Saturday and Sunday, every public
You're
holiday, I
there.
have to be on site. I have to be there. That means that my weekend was a Tuesday and Wednesday, or a Wednesday and Thursday. I don't think it was ever Thursday. I think it was more the Tuesday and Wednesday. But either way, Tuesday,
Yes.
Wednesday, or Wednesday, Thursday. What that means is that I have to book in any inspections that require me to drive a distance. I'm not going to do it on the one day. I'm going to stay
No.
overnight wherever I'm going to. So I booked out my 20 favorite out of the 200 with the local real estate agents that were listing those properties for sale. When I drove
Right.
down to the town and met up with a real estate agent, as I'm driving through the town and I see the front, sometimes I could see that there's too many trees, and for me to do anything would require just removing
Add
trees,
trees.
or it was, the gutter was wrong, or there was something that was already visually looked like it's going to be too expensive for me in the future to do something. So I narrowed it down to
Yeah.
about 10 inspections out of the 20 that I wanted to do before arriving in the town. And then from those
Right.
10, I made an offer, I believe, on six out of the 10, because the six of them
Yeah.
were listed at the right price, or they're all listed slightly above the correct price, but I estimated from the correct numbers what they should be listed at. So I made offers that weren't too low, but were reasonable for those six properties. And two of them said yes straight away. And out of the six, you'll see on that list, two of them within the next year or two, the owners or the vendors finally agreed to that price, but it was a year later. But that's okay. It didn't bother me because my mortgage
Yes.
wasn't due until after I bought it. So eventually, out of those six, I actually ended up owning four out of the six. The other two went to other people, and that's okay. But it meant that
Yes.
my research was spent over a 2-day period regionally, and the rest of it was in my lunch breaks or in the evenings or on my
Yes.
weekends when I was
Yes.
still working full time, doing my 50-hour a week regular job. The good thing there,
Yes.
now we spoke a bit about what the purchase prices were on them, and we said that they were
Yes.
160, 155, 200,
155, 200, 150.
110 and 150.
Yes.
So the
110,
selling prices
150.
on those. So we're going to go in the same order. The
Yes.
160 was 350,
Three.
sold for 350.
Yes.
The 155 sold for 229.
229.
The 200 sold for 400.
Four
The
hundred.
110,000 sold for 450.
50. Hoo hoo.
The 150 sold for 300, and
Yeah. That's all of them.
the is it was that five? Okay, great.
That's fine.
So you're probably going to ask me two questions, Tony. One of
Yes.
which was, how did I get 110 to 450? Right, because that's the exciting news.
That was
And
the first one. Yes.
the flip side of that, you're probably going to also ask the negative. Why did the one that I
Yes.
purchased for 155 only sell for 229?
Only sell for, yes. Please tell us.
There's a good lesson to be learned there. And I know that if I did the same thing again, I would do the same thing again. So one thing I noticed was when I bought the property for
You still made a
155,
profit, though.
yes, but when
I
I
mean,
bought the property for 155, I looked at the size of the land, and the land size was correct, but the shape was a very sharp triangle. So think about a very sharp triangle where the backyard goes into the peak. So the front of the house sits on the street, but your backyard might be large enough for a massive dog. But if you're going to build another house, it's a triangle. You're not going to fit the
yeah,
house. The sewer line is in the wrong
I
spot.
see.
So when I bought it, I already knew that the area was good and that the rental return for this 2-bedroom house, and think about a 2-bedroom house compared to a 2-bedroom unit, this 2-bedroom house
Yeah.
was good enough to get a tenant consistently, but not good enough for me to ever build on it. So that was also the
Okay.
first one I sold. So from the ones that I bought, the first one that I ever sold was sold 5 years
Was
later.
that
So
one?
purchased in 2014, sold in 2019.
19.
But it was sold because there was nothing that could be built on it. And the tenant started off by paying around 350 a week, and I bought it for 155. And as the rent increased, it increased for 360, 370, 380 a week. But
Yes.
remember my rule of trying to get twice the amount. So if it's 229,000, if you take away the thousands and just make it 229 and
Yes.
double that,
Yes.
that's 460 a week.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting 460.
And
I
didn't
was
get.
getting 380, which meant that it was
Yeah.
smarter for me to liquidate it, because the value of liquidating it was only 229,
Should.
but couldn't see anything I could manufacture rather than waiting for the suburb to get it from the 229 to the 400,000 that would make it worthwhile. So I liquidated that and
Yeah.
moved that money into the other property, which was the one that I bought for 110. Now, what I did for the 110 property is the profit that I made, because remember, when you're buying, you're only paying the deposit
Yes.
and the bank pays the rest. So
That's
I
right.
got my deposit back, as well as the profit, as well as through the years
Yes.
that I kept it, every year I made more profit and more profit, because the tenant was paying a gap over what the interest rate was for the bank, which meant that within
Yes.
5 years, every year, let's do some rough calculations, Tony.
Yes.
Every year, if you're renting it out, let's say your interest rate today is 3%. If you borrowed the whole amount and
Fair
you bought the
enough.
place for 155,000, the 3% would be, oh, I should do this in a calculator. It would be useful to be correct, wouldn't it? 155.
I was going to say, don't make me do that in my brain.
So 3% interest on 155,000 in a year
is
4,650. So let's say council is going to cost you 1,000 a year. Your water rates will cost you 1,000 a year. So we're up to about 6,000, 7,000. Let's round it up to 10,000 a year as your cost.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you're earning from your tenant, let's say you're earning 250 a week.
Mm-hmm.
In a single year,
$1,000
if they haven't left, that's 13,000 that the tenant is paying.
Yeah.
And the first year,
so
you're
that's a
earning,
positive
$3,000. Positive three. Because you're spending between $7,000 and $10,000. And remember that sinking fund we said that we're going to put some money aside just like Strata?
Yeah.
So your bills might be $7,000, but you're always putting aside that little bit extra. So let's say every year you put aside $3,000 and you're spending the $3,000 to pay back part of what the bank has given you as a loan to buy that $155,000.
Right.
Now, when the rent increases to $280 a week, instead of 250, the difference there, so 280 times 52, is now 14,560 instead of 13.
Yes.
So it's gone up by roughly $1,500.
Yeah.
Now the interest that you're paying on your mortgage hasn't changed. Your amount that you owe the bank hasn't changed. The amount that you pay the council hasn't changed. They normally don't go up every year as much as you think that they do. So let's say we still have the same
thing. It feels that way.
Exactly. Let's say we still have that $7,000 fee and we're still putting aside the $3,000. So we've kept the $3,000 from the first year. We're putting aside another $3,000 from the second year.
$3,000? Mm-hmm.
So now the bank account will have $6,000. We're still paying your $7,000 to the council, to the interest, to the water rates. You've got $7,500 left over. So just in the 2 years, we've covered 7,500 plus the 3,000 from the first year. So that's 10,000 that you've put aside, one into the sinking fund and one that you've repaid your mortgage above what you needed to pay just for interest. So that's the first 2 years, you've already got 10,000. The next 2 years, just to make it fast and easy, at least 10,000 more for 2 years, probably closer to 15,000.
Yes.
And then for the final year, because now you've had three steps of increase on the rent, five steps of increase on the rent, you're putting aside even more. So you've put aside 10,000 for the first 2 years, 10,000 for the second 2 years, probably 10,000 for the third year. So that's 30,000 off your mortgage or as sitting in your account. What is your deposit that you've paid to buy the property in the first place? So on $155,000, let's assume it's a 20% deposit. That's roughly $30,000, isn't it?
It is.
So guess what? None of the money that's in the property is your money. The whole amount is the bank, what the bank originally gave you. So within the space of 5 years on that particular property, it was paying for itself.
Yes.
And that mortgage had nothing to do with my money. It was 100% the bank's money.
Yes.
And you can transfer the security of the mortgage from one property to the other. So when the person buys it off you, they're not paying back the mortgage.
Yes.
They're giving you free and clear whatever the purchase price is, apart from taxes and solicitor's fees to do the transaction.
Yes. Yes.
So there will be transaction fees, but the $229,000 is... Let's say 200 of that stays as cash in your pocket because you've already been paid back your deposit only in an area where the rent income is higher than your mortgage. So if you're getting a cash flow positive property and that's your initial thought, do that. And when you sell, use the cash for your other projects. So what did I do with that money?
And that's what you did. Yes.
That's exactly what I did. So I took that $200,000 and I split that between the four properties that had several years on them. Because then with that sinking fund I already had and the renovation money, I could do funky things. What do I mean by funky? I mean the more complicated things that cost money for professionals like plumbers, electricians.
Splitting a block in half.
Things, mm-hmm. even putting up a new fence line to show somebody what the split block would look like. So two of those properties, I put a new fence line in. Two of those properties, yes. I redid some of the earthworks, as in new plumbing pipes underneath, PVC pipes, reorganized electrical cables, things that visually make a potential developer understand where something could be taken. Because the scary thing is when you don't know the what if. But if I can prepare a property that has land with specific areas that show the potential visually, then it's not a very high expense because I haven't actually paid the council to finish everything. I'm not paying double the rates. I'm not paying for land subdivision and paying now for twice the water, twice the garbage removal, twice the land rates, twice the council rates. Everything's still on the same block, but it's been pegged. By pegged, I mean there's markers to show where potentially something can be moved. I can now show this visually, and that increases the value to a buyer because they can see what the existing house looks like, what they could rent it out, and at the same time as a tenant is paying their mortgage to rent it, they can take 6 months to build their house or they can take 3 years to build their house. There isn't that pressure. If I was to buy just a piece of land with no house on it, there would be pressure for me to continue paying the bank because you have to start paying the interest as soon as you own that piece of land. If I have a piece of land that can be split into two, and then the tenant that lives on one side pays for both the interest on the land and the interest on the house, then I have no financial stress and I have no time stress. That means I'm making a decision about the right time to do things.
And that makes all the difference in real estate, doesn't it?
It makes all the difference in any job you do. Because stress, whether it's financial or time pressure, doesn't make you focus the way you could when you're working at your optimal. So taking that away is such a blessing in your normal job. And that works both in real estate or in any other full-time job you're doing or when you're doing your passion. Mm. So if you're passionate about writing the next app, if you're passionate about creating the next piece of art, if you're passionate about your music, then take the stress out of the picture and get your finances sorted so that you're not working at the urgency to think that it's just survival mode. Start working with your passion because you've got the finances done and you can tick the box to say, my finances are no longer dependent on the boss liking me or not liking me. I don't have to be the favorite of anybody. The finances are out of the way. Now I can focus on my passion. Now I can create the best TikTok video. Now I can create the best YouTube. Now I can create the best YouTube channel. And that gives you the right, the motivation, and the freedom to just think clearly. How good is that?
Yes. It's phenomenal. Phenomenal, Amir. Phenomenal. So that $110,000 property at Oberon, which realized the $450,000. What did you do? I want to know what you did.
Massive council approved changes. So part of what council allows is removal of weeds. When I bought that property, it was a very large block. The good thing was that it's a corner block. That means that I'm not sharing a fence with any neighbor. So it's a corner block, but it's actually, it has three streets around it. So I'm not sharing any fences with any neighbors. It's a complete standalone block. The downside of that is that guess who's responsible for all the tree weeding, lawn mowing, and everything?
That'd be you.
Mm-hmm. Me. Me or the tenant living in it. So when we bought it, it had an existing tenant and the tenant stayed there for 5 years. Mm-hmm. During the time the tenant was there, they did all the little bits and pieces, but they didn't pay for the expensive arborist, the expensive tree maintenance people, which meant that some of the trees had weeds growing on the outside of them that killed the tree that was on the inside. So there was a few massive eucalyptus trees that were completely surrounded by vines and were threatening to completely collapse. So when we hired the tree experts to come in and work out what tree is safe to keep and what tree has already died and needs to be removed, I spent around $5,000 to $6,000 just on the yard, just on the tree work.
Yeah.
But the benefit of that is we got to keep a eucalyptus tree that was at the edge of the property that was healthy and looked fantastic. And the other trees, that there was an apple tree, there was a lot of small trees, but they were all killed by vines and just slowly, every season you could see the fruits weren't quite ripe. And yeah, unfortunately, it is what it is. But having the arborist come in for $6,000, that cleared the area and opened it up so that you could visually see where the second and potentially third house on that block would go. It's 1,700 square meters. So that's not an acreage, it's not a farm, but it's 2 minutes drive to the shops. So it's right, almost right in the center of town. 2 minute drive to the library, to the two shopping, to the two supermarkets, to over on council. So all the important things are only 2 minutes drive away. What that meant was it's already in a great position, but it just looked completely overgrown by shrubs, by trees, by weeds. Mm. So most of the time was just spent on redoing the garden. And then I actually hired one person from Newcastle, which is around 5 hours from Oberon, and one person from Sydney, which is about 2.5 hours from Oberon, to drive down to Oberon, because these are people that I knew as tradespeople that I trusted from before. And they came to Oberon to do specific jobs. One of them was to put in posts and concrete them in so that a new fence line could be put together. And there was 22 new metal posts. That means that the next person who's buying the property can go to Bunnings or can go to one of the steel manufacturing companies and buy a steel fence line to just click into space. So every fence post is straight. It's plumb, meaning it's not tilted. It's at the right angle. The concrete's deep enough to support a fence line. And because they did that properly and they gave it a long time to dry over a 3 to 6 month period, it can now hold up the weight of Colorbond is one brand name. So you might put Colorbond fencing around it, but I don't need to do that. Anybody who buys the property can now see where the Colorbond fence would separate one house from the new house they're building, which means they can have a tenant paying for both sides of the property visually. So part of it was to import the people to come in to do the big stuff. The other thing was removing the old kitchen, removing the old carpets, all the excess stuff. So I didn't spend anywhere near the $200,000 that came from the first property, but I divided that $200,000 amongst the other four properties.
The other properties.
This property and the other three properties.
Yeah. Fantastic, Amir. So Oberon for you has been very good in terms of real estate, building your portfolio and making the profit that gives you the freedom to do what you want. These learnings that you've talked about with your real estate in Oberon, you've applied all of them to other parts of Australia as well. And so since we're just about out of time, next week we're going to continue to talk about these properties and the things that you did, the time that you waited between purchase and sale, and the different things and innovative things that you did, and how you managed the cash flow of those businesses. We'll continue that discussion next week with Amir. Amir, thank you so much for sharing so honestly and openly about your real estate. I think it's really valuable for the audience to hear practical examples of what you can do, and in a way that you've explained it quite simply. It's easy to understand. Anyone can do this. Now, remember, audience, Amir started years ago with $5,000. And he still does a lot with very little, and you can do that too. And the whole point is that Amir wants people to create freedom around their life using real estate. Amir, final word for today.
If you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, don't do it. If you sit there
That's
thinking,
fine.
you're exhausting yourself, but it's even more frustrating to think about doing something and not do it. So take the action step and get professional advice so that you're moving in the right direction as soon as possible.
And Amir is available to help you with that professional advice. And when you see this show, underneath you'll find links to all of Amir's social media, his website, and also his email. Amir Michel, thank you so much for being on Radio Tony today and talking about real estate. Audience, we will be back next week. Bye for now.